Christian greetings to each one of you here that's assembled tonight. Glad to see each one here. Addressing child safety and protection concerns. I'd like to start out with a question, and that is, why be concerned about child safety and protection? The psalmist in 127:1 says, "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward." You see, children are a gift from God. It's a heritage from the Lord. And of course, we recognize that we're entrusted with them. There's a responsibility that we have for their safety and protection. We understand that from the time they were born, yes, they certainly needed protection then, but as they grew older, they needed direction, and they need correction. So a natural question that arises is, who should give the protection and the direction and the correction that children deserve and need? I like to suggest that first of all, number one on the list is parents. We're responsible for bringing children into our homes, and therefore we must assume our God-given responsibility for their nurture, and both physical, spiritual, and also emotional. As infants, we understand they're totally dependent on their parents, and of course as time goes on, that dependency somewhat lessens. Secondly, we have not only parents, but then we also have the church, and we have our Christian day schools. I believe they also play a vital role in teaching and molding the character of our children as they develop. I'm sure that we all agree tonight that none of our children should be subjected to the unhealthy influence of the public school system. The third category of those that are responsible for children, at least in our society, is we have the government. The government has continued to increase its influence, you might say, and oversight the last number of years. You say they have. In some respects, they have. I cannot explain how it is that so many children's lives are snuffed out before they're born, and yet after they're born, then all of a sudden things change. I can't explain that one. But the fact is, that is the society, that is the government that we live under today. Child abuse and neglect are realities in today's world, and that's probably why the government sees the need of addressing that reality. We can understand why state laws are written to protect children. However, let me say this, Christians, we need to understand and recognize that we, as parents, have the primary responsibility for our children's welfare. It's the parents, along with the support of the church, and not the government. I believe, therefore, that every effort should be made to prevent our children from coming under the custody of the state or child youth services whenever possible. There's things we can do to minimize that likelihood. I just think of one easy way. I think every parent should have a written will. And it's not because of the assets that you own, but it's because of the primary asset, and that is your children. You see, if a father and mother pass away and leave minor children, then the state claims, and they do, they take responsibility and custody of those minor children, placing them in a foster home at their will. I'm not saying they're going to ignore the family's wishes, relatives, but they can. In fact, they can even deny those children having a Christian day school education. With a will, you name a guardian. That guardian will then have a say and can make decisions on behalf of your minor children, give direction where they live and where they go to school. So that's one area where some control can be had. We are thankful that, generally speaking, here in America, the government respects families that provide safety and protection for their children. In talking with Child and Youth Services, they will admittedly recognize that we can do a better job taking care of our children than they can, as a state, the church can. So we're glad that the government does respect, in many ways, the ability of parents to make decisions in relation to their children. One of the areas, however, that we do differ from general society, is our approach to child discipline. I'd like to spend a little bit of time on this because I think it's important for us to recognize and not be intimidated by what we hear around us. You know, the present generation is trying to raise children without using corporal punishment. You see, they equate corporal punishment with child abuse. And I'd like to be very clear on this point, and that is that scriptural child discipline and child abuse are not synonyms, are not synonymous. It's not the same thing. Child discipline, administered properly, is never child abuse. However, improper child discipline may lead to or constitute child abuse. One of the most important duties of parents, of course, is to train, to teach and to train and discipline their children. You see, biblical parental discipline is for the child's safety and protection. We discipline our children for their eternal good, not for our revenge. It is my opinion that habitually overlooking and failing to administer corporal punishment to young children is actually a form of child abuse. It really is. You hurt the child when you fail to discipline them. You see, undisciplined children have a much harder time fitting into society than disciplined children. School teachers will tell you that. Children that come from undisciplined homes will find it more difficult to control the actions and reactions of children that are undisciplined. Open your Bibles to Proverbs 22. I'm not going to have you be looking at a lot of scriptures tonight. I'm going to make reference to a number of them, but I think since there's quite a number of them in Proverbs that we could look at tonight that relate to this subject, open your Bibles to Proverbs 22. I'd like to look at two verses. First of all, in chapter 22, verse 15, it says here that foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. That's clear. It gives us what the problem is. It's foolishness. It's bound in the heart of a child, but it also tells us the means by which, the primary means that should be used to correct that problem. Go back a couple pages to chapter 29. Proverbs 29, verse 15 says, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." Biblical guidelines, I believe, must be followed for discipline to be effective and to not end up being abusive to the child. I'd like to consider three areas that relate to discipline. First of all, the need of discipline. What type of actions absolutely should be discipline? Lying, cheating, stealing, disrespectful talk, filthy speech, and deliberate disobedience, I believe, require punishment. In fact, even society disapproves of those actions. However, it's more important for us to think about these because they also, more importantly, violate God's word on this subject. To train up a child in the way he should go requires a change of direction. And children deliberately hurting other children Or children hurting animals? Willingly, knowingly, hurting animals, I believe, is unacceptable at any age. And to fail to discipline in these cases only emboldens the child to commit more egregious actions in the future. Furthermore, unless you can change their behavior, they're going to develop habits that are going to be harder to curb in the future and may eventually lead to patterns of criminal behavior. Now, fortunately, parents have the opportunity to be able to confront the evil nature that children inherited with discipline. You can ignore the books, the Dr. Spock's books, and other articles written by child psychologists that claim that discipline, corporal discipline, will warp a child's personality and adversely affect them for life. Actually, it's the opposite that's true. You're in Proverbs here, chapter 29, verse 17. Look what it says. It says, "Correct thy child, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul." Correct the child, and he'll give you rest. Of course, this should be done, I believe, at an early age, when they're the most pliable and teachable. Secondly, the time for discipline. I personally believe that discipline is best if it follows the misconduct as soon as possible afterward, so that the child makes the connection between their what they did, or what they didn't do, either way, and the discipline. However, at the same time, let me just suggest, never, ever discipline your children in public, or else you may find yourself with an investigation on your hands. Because when people see, in the world see, even biblical child discipline take place, from their background and what they're taught, they equate that to abuse, and therefore likely to report you to the authorities. Find a private room or some other secluded place and keep the punishment as short and as quiet as possible. As it relates to the method of discipline, there's various means and methods of discipline. I'm not going to give you a whole catalog of different ways. I think parents soon find what different types of discipline that work. I will say this: if there is no pain, it'll probably have little value. Proverbs 19, let's go back a number of pages. Proverbs 19, verse 18, here says, "Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying." That tells you there's pain involved. "Let chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying." Painless punishment is generally ineffective. A pat on the back, to be effective, needs to be low enough and hard enough, and yet not abusive, not brutal. I believe that corporal punishment for the Christian parent is not simply an option, but rather it's a biblical command. I do not think that Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1 was written necessarily, and the context is not with child discipline in mind, child training and focus, but I think the principle applies. Let me read the verse. You don't have to turn to it. "Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them that are exercised thereby." I like to just take that verse and reword it to apply it for what our subject is tonight. No child discipline for the present gives joy to the parents, but afterward it becomes obvious that it was a learning and a blessing, a learning experience and a blessing for the child as they respond to the discipline and can experience peace. I believe that explaining the reason for the punishment is a good idea. Help them to understand that the punishment is not being given out of revenge, but rather to help them to be a better person. How do you keep discipline from becoming abusive? I'd like to suggest six tips, six ideas, six thoughts. Number one, never, ever, never punish out of revenge. You see, our tempers, sometimes we have trouble keeping them where they belong, but our tempers need to be in control, even though we've been displeased, perhaps, by their actions. Number two, corporal punishment should be limited to only enough strokes to the child's posterior to achieve the desired response. I had a high school teacher that it only took two or three swats, and you never wanted to come up in the front of that classroom again, like for that reason. He did it in the front of the class. And if it happened the beginning of the school term, it probably didn't happen the rest of the time. How much should be given? Certainly the seriousness and the repeated occurrence would affect the severity of the punishment. Number three, avoid abusive type punishments. Now, what I mean by that is I'm not talking about giving, 40 lashes or something like that. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm talking about an abusive type of a punishment. Let me give an illustration. Let's say that you know that your child is extremely fearful of the dark. An abusive punishment would be for you to lock him in a dark room. See the connection there? In other words, it has to do with the fear. You're capitalizing on a fear that you know that they have. That is wrong. It should never be done. Number four, the length of the punishment should be short so that the child understands the matter is settled. Bring closure to it. Not a type of punishment that goes on and the child never knows when it's really when the end is. All punishment needs to have a definite completion when both the parent and the child consider the matter settled. Number five, repeated threatening without action destroys the effectiveness of our words and undermines our authority. Besides that, it ends up confusing the child because they don't know. They're never quite able to determine until afterwards whether you really meant it or whether you didn't. And that's bad. They should understand that our words mean, we mean what we say what we mean. Number six, for older children, I think withholding privileges for a reasonable period of time can also be an effective type of punishment. One final word may be related to discipline, and that is since current federal law mandates that medical professionals report to child and youth services agencies any suspect of negligence or abuse, it may be a good idea to have a frank talk with your doctor and make sure that he understands the difference between biblical discipline that uses the rod and child abuse. That means he could understand if there's a marking, perhaps, that he may have a question about. It may be good to have that discussion. Another area of child abuse I'd like to touch on tonight is sexual abuse. I agree with the Apostle Paul in Ephesians 5 when he gave a list of sins, including sexual sins, and he said, "Let it not be once named among you as become a saint." He also said that it's a shame to even speak of those things that are done of them in secret. And for that reason, I'm not going to be very explicit tonight. But let me just plead with you, and maybe I need to look a little more on this side of the room than that one, that if you're involved in such secret activities, confess it to God, seek help, and both for yourself and others. Remember, the actions of impurity involving minors is child abuse, and in many states is a criminal offense. However, it can come from outside. And I recognize that we're living in a world that is morally corrupt and shameless in its evil practices. I recognize that. But add to that fact that within every person is an evil nature that's inclined toward sin. So really, it's imperative for all of us, for each of us, to keep our hearts and our minds clean from the pollution that is in the world through lust. And while God's grace, I believe, is sufficient to forgive impurity, it's much better to preserve purity than to seek its forgiveness of impurity. And so with that in mind, I'd like to give you five practical suggestions to help protect our innocent children from sexual abuse. Number one, guard their associates. Guard their associates. When I say associates, associations that they have, who they're with, you know, children's vulnerability exists at any age, and therefore it's important, I believe, that parents are vigilant. Children should not be allowed to spend long periods of time together unsupervised. Our children visiting with worldly neighbor children should be infrequent, brief, and fully supervised, and preferably on our turf. Number two, we should guard their environment as much as possible. You know, we live in a society where individuals wearing skimpy clothing and having less and less shame about it, and indecency, it just seems like it abounds. And the question could be raised, can we shield our children from that? Is there something we can do to, you know? And the answer is, no, you probably can't. But can you minimize it? And I say, yes, we can. There's a number of things that we can do to minimize our children from that influence. I think of one right now. You like to go to the ocean? The ocean's pretty to watch. See those waves rolling in? When do you go? I say, go in the early spring or late fall. You would not want to go in the middle of the summer, unless you happen to be someplace where other people haven't found it. But that's pretty difficult nowadays. Pretty difficult nowadays, unless you're on an island somewhere, to be able to have that to be a reality. Number three, another way to help protect their innocent children from sexual abuse, and that is be concerned about the siblings, about siblings' interpersonal relationships. I think it needs careful monitoring. Maybe just a couple of pointers. I think that parents need to provide separate bedrooms for boys and girls when they're no longer infants. So it makes sense that brothers and sisters should not be permitted to enter each other's bedrooms without parental permission or knowledge. However, for proper, effective monitoring, I believe parents, it should be understood that parents have the right to walk in unannounced at any time. Separate bathing and dressing should be done early enough that they don't recall it ever being anything other than that. Number four, children should also be taught to knock and get permission before entering into their parents' bedroom. I think that reason should be obvious. Number five, children should be taught to share with their parents anything at all that makes them has made them feel uncomfortable, regardless who was responsible for it. There needs to be that communication, that openness, that understanding that if something doesn't seem right, talk to daddy or mommy about it. That's what they should do. Teach them that it's okay to say no, especially to strangers. Teach them to say no if you're not present and someone tries to touch any part of their body that their clothing normally covers. Teach them to say no if you're not present. If someone grabs and tickles them, you know, even though it's meant for fun. You know, some of the innocent things that start out so innocent end up creeping up and eventually end up being much more sinister, perhaps, than what may have appeared at first. Remember, you will never regret any effort to prevent abuse or the pollution of your children's hearts and minds. I'd like to now move on to a couple of other areas that relate to child safety and protection. First of all, I'd like to talk a little bit about health care. As parents, you are responsible to provide a healthy environment for your home. I'd like to just list 9 quick practical ways that contribute to good health care, and there's many, many more. I'm not going to tell you what vitamins to take, just so you know. Number 1, drinking water should be tested periodically to make sure it's free of disease. You see, you can have bad water and it doesn't taste bad. Get it? Did you ever get it tested? Not a bad idea. Number 2, our houses should be clean and orderly. You know, simple things like washing dishes after each meal, disposing of the garbage, and storing food in containers to prevent mice and other insects from having free reign makes sense. I know of a case where the dishes needed to be washed before each meal. The house was cruddy, and maggots had run of the house. Your sisters would feel very uncomfortable being there. Me too. Number 3, nutritious and balanced meals should be the norm. Frequent happy meals with French fries doesn't meet that test. Number 4, canning, freezing are good ideas. But it needs to be done in a way that prevents food from developing dangerous bacteria. Number 5, daily grooming and sanitation are important. You say, sanitation? What do you mean? Sanitation, grooming? What? I wish you could have seen what I saw over in Kenya, Africa. I have pictures of it. Flies swarming around, crawling on babies' faces, right up to their eyes, all over their face. Why did they do that? One of the problems is one of their practices over there is they used milk to wash the babies' faces. I say, it was just, and it doesn't take that. You can have other areas as well. Just good daily grooming and sanitation are important. Number 6, dental needs and vision problems should get immediate attention. You see, if you don't take care of it right away, it could develop into something that's maybe even cause irreparable harm in the future. Medicine cabinets should be kept out of the reach of young children that are not aware of the dangers of overdose. You know, take a number of pills that they don't know what it is. Number 8, seek professional medical care when needed. Seeking medical care, professional medical care, is not an indication that we do not trust the Lord. I think he expects us to be able to use their services. If you have a suspected broken bone, just don't wait. Check it out. Cuts that require stitches should get prompt attention. Subscription medications that require refills, get them. Follow the rules. You probably don't know better than your doctor. If a serious accident occurs, dial 911. Your children ought to know that telephone number in case of an accident, because you might be the one laying on the floor, and they would have to call. There's been cases where 3-year-olds have done that. They can be trained. Now, I think there's exceptions sometimes when you don't maybe necessarily call for medical help. You just go. I think of a case back when I was, I'm not exactly sure how old I was, but just a couple of years old. My father had a garage, and he repaired vehicles in it. And I spied a glass soda bottle that had my favorite soda in it. It was orange. I loved orange juice, orange soda bottles. And so I, without him noticing it, I got it. And I started drinking it. It didn't take long till my dad realized something seriously wrong. I screamed. I cried. He grabbed me, put me in the car, and he rushed me into the hospital. In fact, he told me, he said, you turned blue before we ever got to the hospital. Put a hose down, pumped my stomach out, or did something like that, I was told. Anyway, I survived. But, you know, looking back, we can easily see how some preventive measures could have taken place. I mean, for my dad, yeah, that was really handy. Put in a glass bottle, you need to pour it in the carburetor. Just before you had the fuel-injected engines, you poured it in the carburetor to get the car started. I mean, that's just the way you did it. But it shouldn't have been there within my reach. Well, it was an obvious hazard. Let's just make sure that any serious physical illness or accident that our children may experience, and it does happen, is not due to our negligence. Let me talk a little bit about work involvements. You know, generally it's good for children to learn to work. Fathers should teach their children to work. But I think we have to be careful that we make sure that the work is is in a measured way that measures their development. It's good to teach them skills, but let's make sure that it's something they can easily handle. Mothers teaching their daughters housekeeping skills, cooking, sewing, washing, cleaning. Those are things they ought to learn before they go out and get a job and they get older. But make sure that of all those jobs, make sure that you don't infringe upon the time that they need to get their homework done during school time. Let me give you just a couple practical pointers and precautions that might be in order in relation to their work. Consider the child's limitations. Might be smaller, younger, not as strong, more feeble. That needs to be taken into consideration. Give adequate training and instruction with safety in mind, especially if they're operating equipment. Be very careful. You know, with equipment can be dangerous. Loose clothing gets snagged in belts and chains. Of course, that's good advice for parents as well. To have a child constantly operating at the limit of their abilities provides little protection in emergencies and unexpected happenings. What I mean by that, it doesn't take much to train a growing boy, all right? It doesn't take much to teach them that you can take a skid loader, you push forward, you know, if you want to go front, you pull back the lever to go back, so you can stand back and watch them do it. It doesn't take much training. But now, what happens if that thing starts jumping? And I know what I'm talking about. I was on one once, and I wasn't a child. I was an adult, and that thing started jumping back and forth, and I hardly knew what to do. It just seemed like whatever I did, it was doing the opposite, and it was just, I say when you have a child operating to the extent of their experience and knowledge and training, and then something, you know, happens like that, that's when accidents happen. So be careful. Minimize hazards. Make sure equipment has adequate guards and protections. Ladders. When they're not needed, take them down. Don't let them up against the building where children can climb up and fall down. Electrical cover should be in place. Flammable and poisonous products should be safely stored and marked in clearly marked containers. Children should never, ever ride on tractor fenders or in the front end buckets where a sudden bump or a flip of a lever or whatever could send them under a crushing wheel. Couple of other areas I'd like to just touch on yet, and then I'll close. Some other safety, general safety concerns. I think it's good for parents to stop, maybe tonight, you can talk about it. What is the most dangerous thing that we have around our house or farm or business? What's the most, the biggest danger? Maybe you can't think of any, and that's good. You know, Deuteronomy 22:8 says, when thou buildest a new house, then thou shalt make a battlement for thy roof, that thou bring not blood upon thine house, if any man fall from thence. So even in the Old Testament, they were told to put, you know, guards up. What about open tanks, ponds, lagoons? They ought to have fences or some other protection around them. Remember, children can drown in the very little amount of water, very shallow water. A house that's located near a road, passing traffic, calls for special precautions. And I think children at a very early age need to learn that, you know what, you don't go down past this point of the lane. You might even want to maybe paint a line across so it's very clear they remember we stay on this side of that. I also think it's a good practice to teach your children, every one of them, to learn how to swim. You never know when they'll be able to save their own life or somebody else's. I feel the same way about CPR for older children. For teenagers, I think it's good to learn. Avoid owning vicious dogs that can harm others. Never leave small children unattended in your vehicle when shopping. I can't believe the number of times that I've read in the paper how people have left their children in hot cars and that could be very dangerous. Never send children to public restrooms without adequate supervision. And the list could go on and on. I'll have to stop with those. You know, accidents and injuries can and will happen. However, I think we, as Christians, above all, understanding our responsibility, should do all we can to minimize them, to avoid them. They should not be the result of our carelessness. Life is precious and fragile. And to recklessly endanger life at any age, I believe, is serious in God's sight. As parents, it's imperative that we consider child safety an important subject and therefore provide the spiritual and physical protections as needed. They say that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and I think that's definitely true in this subject. And then when you think of the spiritual, a life that is stained by impurity can be forgiven and cleansed, but it will never, ever be forgotten. Let's strive to be faithful in these last days, both for our sake and our little ones. And I believe part of that striving is daily asking God for guidance and wisdom. You know, the task of raising our children is huge, but it has rewards that are out of this world. You understand? May God help us all.